the end of an era in Singapore. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The man who transformed Singapore has died. Lee Kuan Yew was 91. Countries the world over, including China, looked to Lee's example of economic transformation, but it was a system that was controversial. Joining us from in front of the Presidential Palace in Singapore is Ali Moore, a correspondent for our partner broadcaster, the BBC. Ms. Moore, thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning.
When you look at the trajectory of Singapore, really by the 1950s, it was a developing country. I was looking at per capita income back then, $550 a year. That's like $1.50 a day compared to $136 a day these days.
This is the extraordinary thing when you look at the legacy of Lee Kuan Yew. I mean, as many people say, and as the title of one of his biographies said, from a third world country to a first world country in a generation. You go back to Singapore in the 1950s and the early 1960s, and it had no resources. Yes, it was a port city, but it had absolutely nothing to sustain it. There were enormous challenges that Lee Kuan Yew faced, and in the space of just 30 years, he really turned things around. He built hundreds of thousands of apartments. He created jobs. He created niche industries. He attracted private investors. He made this a global financial center.
He made it a global financial center. He embraced markets, but it was an authoritarian brand of capitalism.
And Lee Kuan Yew made absolutely no bones about the fact that he was ruling Singapore with an iron fist. If you ask people, the people who are here around me outside the presidential palace where I am, who have come down after work to sign the condolence book, if you say to them he ruled with an iron fist, was the price of progress worth it in terms of the price to personal freedom? Most of them will say yes, because it came so far under his leadership. When you ask about what's next for Singapore, the answer's a little different. Most will say he laid the foundations and he laid them well. What happens next is up to the younger generation. It's also, of course, up to the current leadership, led by the Prime Minister, Lee Hsien Loong, who is Lee Kuan Yew's eldest son. But there is a sense that gradually, slowly, Singapore will change.
The BBC's Ali Moore in Singapore this morning. Ms. Moore, thank you.
You're welcome.
You think of Pirelli tires as Italian, but there's news today its center of gravity is shifting from Milan to Beijing. ChemChina is buying a more than 26% piece of Pirelli. ChemChina is just one of a raft of Chinese state-owned companies that's been on a foreign shopping spree. And Greece's prime minister is in Berlin today for more discussions about future bailouts. Germany has taken a hard line about Greece's finances, and at stake is Greece's continued membership in the European Union. Now there's word that Greece may be interested in changing the conversation slightly. There's talk about Greece asking for World War II reparations. Next story is about a water war that ended during a drought. That sounds odd, but that's what's happened in California, where the city of Los Angeles and air quality regulators in the rural Owens Valley recently called a truce in an ongoing dispute rooted in Los Angeles's century-old water grab. Now, if your history's failing you here, remember the movie Chinatown. Sarah Gardner reports from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk.
When William Mulholland masterminded the L.A. Aqueduct 100 years ago, he had no idea of the environmental disaster that would follow. The aqueduct drained Owens Lake in the Eastern Sierras, a lake once 12 miles top to bottom, 8 miles wide. Owens turned into a salt flat, and when the winds kicked up, the dust storms were phenomenal. At one time, Owens was the biggest single source of dust pollution in the country.
The dust would completely fill the Owens Valley here.
Former air regulator Ted Shady pushed L.A. for years to better control the toxic dust clouds, dust so thick it created a static charge.
It was actually really eerie because you would actually feel the hair rising up on your arm, the hair rising up on the back of your neck, and dust levels so high that they literally could kill you if you didn't have the ability to protect yourself.
Today, the winds still blow, but those hair-raising dust storms are a thing of the past. For over 15 years now, Los Angeles has spent more than $1 billion on the biggest dust control project in the U.S. L.A. ratepayers probably don't know it, but basically,
2 months out of their whole year's worth of payment on a bill towards water goes to Owens Lake.
But that's about to change, says Richard Harrisick. He's L.A.'s director of water operations. He says over the years, the city's flooded, graveled, and planted vegetation on nearly half the lake. After years of legal fights over how much more the city needed to do, a new agreement settles that question once and for all. And both sides agree the valley's dust problem is nearly fixed.
There's nothing to argue over anymore. And so both sides can take all the energy that was going to the courts or arguing orders and really get to just geek out and figure out how to do Owens Lake, you know, better, cheaper, faster kind of deal.
Better and cheaper, meaning using less water, for one. After all, this is a historic drought, so flooding trouble spots now seems wasteful. On a recent morning, a plow was tilling a section of the lake bed instead. Nick Barbieri works for the Air Pollution Control District here.
Yeah, this is basically zero water, and this is creating a rough surface with large clots that the wind can't erode.
This patchwork of dust control makes for one of the most surreal landscapes in the U.S. But surreal is relative in this neighborhood. Death Valley lies straight east. In the Owens Valley, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
She said surreal there. It is one of the most surreal landscapes you'll ever see. Sarah has a slideshow. Click the link to her story at marketplace.org, where you can also find our series, Water, the High Price of Cheap. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.